killing 20 people at an airport or running over, you know, a couple dozen people on the sidewalk. But everybody that we see as we go about our daily business, when you go down to Wally World, when you're just here and there and everywhere, every single person that you lay your eyeballs on, if they are outside of Christ, they're dying. They're lost. And that's why we have to have this kind of emphasis. Now, if those crazies can completely dominate all the discussions and all the world governments and all the big meetings of the world trying to figure out how they're going to deal with it, imagine what we could do. I mean, truly. Now, what is the one thing those guys got going for them? Commitment. Commitment. They're willing to strap a bomb vest to themselves and blow themselves to smithereens for their cause. You know, the Bible says we haven't resisted unto bloodshed yet, striving against sin. And I wonder if maybe we need to do that a little bit more. You know, I mean, really put ourselves to the cause here that it's going to maybe cost us a little something. Now, that starts in our own backyard, and it goes out from there. Okay, now don't get me wrong. I don't think the Lord expected us to be going out and getting ourselves blown up. You know, let come what may, you know, he's kind of in charge of that. But we need to have at least as much commitment as those crazies do, I would think. They're dedicated to what they're doing. And I'm not so sure they're getting nothing out of it, really. If their hope is only after they blow themselves up, they hope they land in the right spot with all the things they've been promised, because living where they're living and in the dirt they live in and the poverty over there, I mean, I don't see what they're getting out of it now. And yet they still do it. I guess it just shows you the prince of darkness is actually more motivated to make sure we don't do this. And he's got those guys working for him. Well, our light is greater than their darkness. And we need to demonstrate that by not what we say here, but what we do. When Jesus saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. That's what Jesus saw. Couple thousand years ago when he walked the earth in a skin suit, that's exactly what Jesus saw. Now this is the exact same condition that we find in the world today. Not much has changed in 2,000 years. Now if we're going to develop an effective plan to evangelize, we will need to be prepared to be all things to all people. I think Mike was talking about that a little bit, being there in the workforce, in the factory. We got all kinds of people there. Good'uns and bad'uns and, you know, people with all kinds of different problems and woe is me's. Now I think in order for us to be effective, and again, I think, you know, I missed the other messages, and maybe you guys have already talked about a lot of this stuff. One of the things that I've believed for a long time is we will need a reason for being in other people's space. I do not like it when people come up and just want to, you know, just try to walking through the mall and trying to hand you something. Or come here, I want you to buy this cell phone plan or something, or call, you know, those, what do you call the telemarketer calls? You know, we got a new phone, you know, so Sue had to make a decision. She was going to buy this phone, and one had, I think, you could block like 60 calls, and one was like 250, and I'm like, well, heck, 60 ought to be enough. Not. We need that 250 blocker, man. I mean, we loaded up the 60, and it's still coming in. That just irritates. I don't want to hear it. Don't just call me like that. If I want something, I'm going to go looking for it. I'll come to you. Well, same with the Word of God. I mean, how many people really are going to want to hear it if you just walk up and throw up on them with a bunch of scriptures? Probably not too many. They're going to like, oh, man, get out of here. you know, man, how do I get this kind of people, man, coming around me? But you know what? If we can become all things to all people by assessing their situation, knowing they're human too. Now, I'm sure everybody in this room has got a story of how you came to the Lord. Whoever it was that talked to you, it might have been a family member, it might have been a coworker, might have been a neighbor, who knows? Or what you were doing. You know, maybe you was at the Little League with friends, you know, or with other parents or something. Naturally, it just kind of came about. Because once we get to kind of know each other, it doesn't take long. People are people. They do have the same problems that we've all had. We're not any different. Christian people are just people that came out of the world, right? That's where we get Christian people. The resource or the source of that is the world. And as Paul would say in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, we've all been there and done that as well. And such were some of you, he said. Yeah, we were like that. In the final judgment, when Jesus sets as king and divides the nations like sheep and goats, he's going to say to those on his right, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in, naked and you clothed me, sick and you visited me. I was in prison, you came to me. Now, I would think that God is expecting that we would launch an effective program that would include meeting the people in their basic needs. This would include the fact that they're also poor in spirit, feel empty and hopeless. If we approach people in this way, we will have a legitimate reason for being in their space. They'll want you to come in. That's what I said. If I want something, I'm going to go looking for it. I don't like it when people just want to try to sell it to me, give it to me, when I'm not even looking for it or asking for it. Because if I want something, if I have a need, if there's a deficit in my life, and I have a need to be filled or something that I got to have, then I'm going to be motivated to get it, to want it. And if I see somebody that's got what I want, they're going to become my new best friend. I mean, we're going to talk. I want what they've got. It's already been well said. That's what people actually need to see in us. See Christ in us first and foremost. It isn't going to be what we say. It's going to be in what we're doing. What'd Mike say about that lady at work? I know exactly who he's talking about. There was a girl in my office used to walk around with this big cross on her, you know, like a necklace thing, you know, and cuss. Oh, man. Is that what's going to bring people to want to know what you know? To have a little bit of what you have? Obviously, you don't have anything. Not that they want. But what we see in the final judgment, when he said, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world, because I was hungry, you gave me something to eat, thirsty, you gave me drink, stranger, you took me in, naked, clothed me, sick, all these basic things that affect all the people all around this world. You know, you might think, if you've never traveled international much, you might think that you don't know what it would be like to be in a foreign country or be with, you know, foreign people like that. Trust me, all the differences disappear in about 15 minutes. It doesn't take long to be spending some time with some really decent people when all that stuff just disappears and you're just looking right straight into the eyes of another created being that was created for God's purposes, for the praise of His glory. It doesn't take long, and man, we're connected. And guess what comes out? You find out they feel the same way and as you do about many things, have the same fears. They laugh at the same dumb things, you know. They want things for their kids, the same things we want. They just want their needs met. They want some security, some safety. And if we're tuned in, becoming all things to all men, that we might by all means save some, we'll be able to connect and be singing on the same song page with them, singing the same song, and we're going places. It's really not all that hard. Now, granted, there are some people in this world, they are crazy. They are bad to the bone, man. They love the darkness rather than the light. And they would kill you as look at you. Stay away from them. Stay away from them. You know, I was coming home from the rehearsal for the wedding the other day. Man, it was pouring rain. And all of a sudden, I looked up ahead. I'm on I-69. Man, I see a guy walking down the road. Now, he's carrying a gas can. But he's going, you know, in the same direction I was. And I thought, oh, man, I can't let that guy walk in this storm on this highway, man. But you know what? I had one other quick thought in my head. I'm glad my wife wasn't with me. Because I might have hesitated to stop and put a stranger in my car when I had my wife in my car. I don't care about me. And I'll deal with whatever I got to deal with. But I just wasn't going to let that guy walk down the road like that in that storm. But I was glad Sue wasn't with me because I would have hesitated. I would have hesitated. But boy, was he glad to see me. He had a need. He had gone 4 miles. His car, his truck was what it was. It was a long way down the road. And man, he couldn't thank me. And in fact, he was from here. Defiance, Ohio, maybe, is where he was from. Yeah, he ran out of gas. So Jesus saw the need, so what did he do? He went about all the cities and the villages. He was teaching in the synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing every sickness and every disease amongst the people. I'm sure they were glad to have him come into town because they had a need. And then he calls his 12 disciples to him, and he gives them power over unclean spirits to cast them out, to heal all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease. I think we would all agree, if we had that power right now, in fact, if we did some kind of miracles, we wouldn't get out of here this weekend. This whole town would be down here, and people would be coming from all over the place. You know, I seen this one time on the news, man. I think it was down, I don't know, it was in New Mexico or Arizona somewhere. Some lady was making a tortilla in the frying pan. And man, the face of that way that tortilla came out, man, looked just like Mother Teresa. You know, that big saggy face, you know. And I mean, you could see Mother Teresa's face in this thing. And she made it a shrine on her mantle. And you should have seen the cars backed up in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico or somewhere, as far as you could see, people coming to come and bow down before this tortilla that she made. You imagine what would happen if we raised the dead or something, or gave sight to a blind person down here? Man, they'd be coming all right. We would have all the permission in the world to be in their space. Now, granted, he was preaching. I'm sure some came for that. But man, it was that healing. That was the healing. Now, granted, if a guy could do that, you'd be glad to have him preach to you. You know, they do it at the soup kitchen in Battle Creek. That's part of the requirement at the Haven of Rest for the homeless people. They got to go in there and listen to the preaching before they get to go eat. And they'll do it because they have a need. So he sends them out. As you go, he said, preach, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Now I want you to heal sick, cleanse lepers, raise the dead. Cast out the demons, freely you've received, freely give. Now provide neither gold, nor silver, nor copper in your money belts, nor bag for your journey, nor two tunic sandals, staffs, workers worthy of his food. And man, they did. But you know, at the end of his life, look what he asked them. In Luke 22, he said, he said to them, when I sent you out without the money bag, he said, you remember that? Without the knapsack, the sandals, did you guys lack anything? They said, nope, nothing. Then he said to them, but now, he who has a money bag, let him take it, and likewise a knapsack, and he who has no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. You know what I read there when I read that? He says, you know how we did this? And you know, did you lack anything when I sent you out before? They said, no, Lord. He said, good, now we're going to do it the old-fashioned way. Because, see, that window was going to close, and all that miraculous healing and all that stuff was all going to disappear. Now it's time to get real. He said, get ready. Get prepared. Because I'm going to send you out, but we're going to do it the old-fashioned way. We'll be doing this the old-fashioned way, long days, short nights, limited budget, plenty of shoe leather, or tires, car tires. You know, some of them still doing the shoe leather. That's weird to me. I think I told you the story. When I was in Myanmar, and Graham Dockenpie was going to show us the water well, me and Gary ended up walking 42 miles in the jungle. Don't trust a Burmese person when you ask them, how far away is it? When they say, it's not far. You don't want to ask that to a person who walks 100 miles. They don't think it's that far. So they still use some shoe leather over there when they're, would they go to the places where there is no roads. Other places are that way too. But whether shoe leather or car tires. And we do not need the hassle of miracles. Trust me, they would be a big hassle that we would not want to deal with, as we mentioned a few minutes ago. Now, here I put some scripture on here. You know this context. It's the 10 lepers. And when he entered a certain village, there met him 10 men who were lepers. They stood afar off. They lifted up their voices, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. So when he saw him, he said, go show yourself to the priest. So as it was when they went, they were cleansed, and one of them, when he saw that he was healed, returned, and with a loud voice glorified God, fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks, and he was a Samaritan. So Jesus answered and said, was there not 10 cleansed? Well, where are the 9? Oh, I bet they went to the church building. They went to the synagogue. I'm sure that's where they went. Probably went to the casino, didn't he? Went to the golf course. Were there not any found who returned to give glory to God except this foreigner? We do not need the hassle of miracles, because that's exactly what we would get. There'd be thousands of people down here. And what do they really want? To serve the Lord, to give up their lives, to save their lives, to deny themselves, to take up a cross daily, to esteem others better than themselves, to look to the needs of others rather than to their own things? Is that what they would really want? We don't need to hassle. The old-fashioned way is just fine. Our efforts to make a difference in the lives of others through the gospel can be very organic and localized. We can do this without all them miracles. We have all heard it said, one by one. Again, we've got everybody in here. Everyone could tell a story about how they actually came to the Lord, that how it worked through one connection to another that brought you to Christ. And I do believe in the divine intervention and all of that. I do believe in paths crossing. Just like we have 2 New Testament examples of Cornelius, the angel of the Lord sending him to bring Simon Peter. You know, divine intervention, whether it's Philip and the eunuch, you know, directing Philip down to right exactly where he'd be crossing the path with that guy coming back from Jerusalem. We can all be effective soul winners individually and collectively. The Lord did say, go into all the world, but that starts in our own backyard. I like the Macedonian vision. Come over to Macedonia to help us. Well, who's us? Well, Lydia was us. Who's us? The jailer was us. The Bible tells us pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit the orphan and the widow in their trouble. The most vulnerable in any society is the orphan and the widow. still to this day. Now, I was reading through here some time ago, but God's serious about the orphan and the widow, man. This will make your hair stand up. God says to his people in Exodus 22:22, "You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child." God says, now, if you afflict them, now he's talking his people, you afflict them in any way, and they cry out to me at all, I'll surely hear their cry. And my wrath will become hot, and I will kill you with the sword. And your wives will be widows, and your children will be orphans. Woo! Yowzers! You afflict them in any way, my wrath, I'll be hot, and I will kill you. I think he means for us to take care and watch out for the orphan and the widow. I said they're most vulnerable. These orphans here in Vietnam, I don't know if you can see that real well. They're laying on pallets. That's a bed. They're just regular shipping pallets. And maybe, I don't know if you can see the stuff in the back of the wall. They're just mold. There's black mold. Because Vietnam is extremely hot and humid. Now, you know, we don't really have orphanages in the United States today, but, you know, a lot of places, they still have the orphanages. Our orphanages disappeared after World War II. It's kind of a cultural thing. We still have orphans. Now, remember, 80% of all the orphans in the world are social orphans. It's not that both their mom and dad is dead. That would be an orphan, that's for sure. But a social orphan does have a parent somewhere, either in jail, prison, drunk, a drug addict. The kids have been taken away. The homes are so bad. 80%. Now, we just have a different way. We have foster care and adoption. We try to get the kids into homes. That is kind of foreign to some people's thinking, especially in Asia. Belarus is kind of like that, slowly coming around, because the authorities there talked with this one lady that really advocates for adoption in Belarus. The government said to her, why would we do that? Why would a person want a child that's not their own in their house? They'll become an heir. And, you know, they inherit in the family. And they said, we have orphanages. She said, I know. That's the problem. So a lot of places, really, this is what they do. This is their solution, is orphanages. And it can be bad. They're institutionalized, these kids. Some have been there all their lives. They have zero social skills. Extremely vulnerable. I was talking to Christy here a little bit ago. These kids are vulnerable to predators. Big time. And sometimes the orphanage directors are in cahoots with the traffickers. So when the kids get ripe, you know, they get to call them up and they come down, pick them up and take them off to Moscow or somewhere and traffic them. It's really sick. So these kids are very, very, that's why God said, you take care of them. You take care of the orphan and the widow. You know that in Isaiah chapter 1 and James chapter 1 tells us, both testaments reaffirm the idea. They tend to be vulnerable, and many times they have short lives. A lot of times in different places, the orphan, the kid ends up there because when he's born, he's disabled. Maybe an arm is gone, a leg is gone, or something like that. And what they do is they put him in a box and get him down to the orphanage and leave him on the porch or something. Because in some cultures, they think that you're cursed if the child is got a problem like that, and they don't want them. They don't want the child. So they end up in a place like that. Nikolai took us there. Bill will remember this place. That's Balan Orphanage. That was in our early days. And then Nikolai said, Steve, you gotta go with me. He brought us out back. And those crosses there, that ain't the half of it. I'm telling you, it goes right out down the road. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them crosses there in the snow. And all it has is a little name like Olga or Sasha, Dima, no last names. They just put the little kid in a box and, bury it. And the lonely widows, that lady there, man, she's the saddest woman I think I've ever met in my life. One time we went there to go visit her with Lena Tushka, and we walked up to her shack. I think it's the next picture, maybe. Yeah, that's her house. We went in there with Lana. But when Lana was calling out her name, she didn't answer. It was dark in there, and I'm thinking, man, I wonder if she's dead or something. But as we went in, she was sitting with her back to us and kind of hunched over. So Lana walked up and spoke her name, and as she touched her, the old woman looked at her and said something in Ruski, in Russian, and the interpreter that was with us said, she just said, "Why can't I die?" She was sitting alone in that dumpy place, you know, nobody, you know, except her drunk sons would come by once in a while and take what little bit of pension money she had so they could buy more booze. She just wanted to die. Just wanted to die. Why can't I? She didn't say, "Oh, hi. Oh, good to see you. Thanks for stopping by." No, why can't I die? "I was hungry," Jesus said. "You gave me food." This is something, these things affect all of us. The orphan, the elderly, the shut in. The need for food on a regular basis. This little boy, when we first met him, the woman, his mom is sitting here, you can't see her. She's crying her eyes out and just thanking us profusely for helping. This is with Sasha Chernitsky's soup kitchen. I remember 1 year Bill raised $30,000 for that soup kitchen. Then another year, $20,000 with his students at Willamette High School. So support for the soup kitchen. But you know, for the mother was crying because she had nothing to feed her kid. You know, I never experienced that in my life. My children always had food in the house. I cannot imagine looking at my kids crying because they have no food and me wondering, where the heck am I going to get it? To be a dad or a mom and not be able to feed your children. I'm sorry to say that little boy got hit by a car. He's gone. He's dead. I didn't know that. Sasha Chernitsky told me. He would have been probably a teenager when that happened. He died just a few years ago. But the homeless. Sasha said, you know, first the soup kitchen was only for the children. But homeless people would show up. And Sasha said, "This is only for children." And one old woman said, "Well, old people have to eat too." And so he was only feeding the kids. At one point, he was feeding almost 300 street children wandering around the streets of Minsk. One day he watched a little boy in the soup kitchen who was taking food and stick it in his pocket. And Sasha was watching him. And then the kid went outside and he watched where he went. The kid walked across the street and was feeding his mother on the corner. The child feeding his mother because she had no food. These kind of things just bring tears to glass eyes, as Jim Spinotti would say. "I was thirsty." Clean water. We don't even think about it. I went over here a minute ago and got some water out of back here and don't even think about it. There's a lot of people in this world. I want you to know something. When Jesus walked the earth, obviously, you know what kind of culture or kind of world it was back then. It wasn't very modern, and when we think of modern. Do you realize that most of the world today is still third world? The vast majority of the people on this whole planet live like they did back then. They don't have nothing. They don't have this kind of access to clean water or anything else. You see, for all of us, we are our brother's keeper. All we have to do is keep our ears tuned in. Now, granted, I said this starts in the backyard. You don't have to go overseas necessarily to reach out to try to help somebody. That's for sure. We have people with a deficit right here all around us. Maybe they have food. Maybe they have clean water. But I'll tell you what, if they don't have Christ, they're empty inside. They're hollow. And they're full of fear. They're full of uncertainty and doubt. They need hope and they need light, and that's exactly what we have for them. Remember when Peter and John was walking in the temple and that lame guy had been lame from his mother's womb laying there, And he's asking alms. He's a beggar. And I'll tell you what, if you've ever seen a beggar in a third world country, it ain't like these guys out here by the mall. They all work for food, you know, and then they go get in their brand new pickup, you know, at lunch break and take off for a few minutes. No, you see a real third world beggar, man, it'll scare you. I mean, I've seen people so twisted up, I've never seen nothing like it. I've seen sores, and I mean, like, unbelievable. Frightening. And this guy's begging when Peter and John are walking in the temple asking alms, and Peter said, look on us. The guy looks up expecting to receive something. Peter says, silver and gold, we don't have, but what we got, we'll give to you in the name of Jesus of Nazareth. Rise and walk. And I'll add, in a newness of life. Because see, when the gospel's preached, people's eyes can open. Their ears can open. And even if they're in a wheelchair, they can rise and walk in a newness of life, even though they don't get out of the wheelchair. This is what the gospel's all about, the power of it. The power of it. I mean, this has been driven home to me, I guess, since I've been involved, and many of you guys too, in this humanitarian aid work, because sometimes you see things, it's like, what can we do here? This is unbelievable. Time Big Mike came back from Belarus and told us about, they went in this dumpy place, man, this girl, man, 20 years old, Tanya, scooting around on the floor. She couldn't walk. Her mother was drunk just out of prison and had these guys over there, and they were messing with her too, by the way. At least that's what we hear. And she just scoots around on the ground because she can't walk. And so we got her a wheelchair. One that, you know, a sport chair that she could use, that she could get around the tight corners in her little dinky house. But you know, you think, what can we do? We can't, like, just heal her like Jesus could do, but that doesn't mean that you can't do nothing. Mike asked her, because she had a positive attitude, old Tanya there. He says, how do you keep such a positive attitude? She goes, Jesus. So now through our contact, through Vieira, the Red Cross lady, they're picking her up and taking her to the church on a regular basis, and she's always there. She's really, really getting into that. I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. Again, we take it for granted, but this is Vietnam. We get those water wells in for about $150, and this is the water system in Myanmar. Stranger, and you took me in. Olga Goncharenko here is a great lady. We just had her here in the States. Bill had her out there in Oregon trying to raise money. You guys know her. She was here about 2 years ago, spoke right at this rally, and was looking for a commitment of $500 to help support the flats that she needed to house. These are some of these orphans. You can see these are nice-looking young ladies. You can imagine the predators that would just love to get their hands on them. Thanks to Olga, who has kept, you know, been with them since they were in the orphanage. Sveta was left on the in the maternity ward when she was born. That girl was in the orphanage for 17 years, institutionalized. And but thanks to Olga, who watched them grow up, and when they come of age, she was right there to scarf them up, bring them into this safe place. You took me in. This guy here is a former Belarusian army colonel, and he houses homeless people. He's kind of a strange guy, but he lets the homeless come right in there and lay right on the floor, because in Belarus, when the winter comes, man, I mean, it is cold. Way below zero, and a lot of those homeless people freeze to death if it wasn't for this guy here. Naked in you clothed me. This here is a shelter in Belarus, one that Bill's team adopted. This is the Oktoberskate shelter. Again, these are kids, if they're in a shelter, they're only there because they're taken from the home. The police have taken them out. They'll go in the shelter till maybe 6 months. If they can't go back home, they go to the orphanage. Vietnam, the kids getting some clothes so they can go to school. And, you know, we've got this dress thing going on. Well, Christy says she's got some dresses for us coming from North Lima. That'd be from Jerry Garrett and some of the ladies over there. But our ladies at our assembly, you know, we've had it in the newsletters. I'm to tell you, it's unbelievable. They made like 6,000 dresses last year for little girls. We take them overseas and we hand them out. Man, they love them. These are great quality dresses. And some of the, you know, we got a letter back one time, or they did, I should say, because these dresses went to Haiti. And our ladies got the letter back. Tom Parker tried to read it and couldn't read it to the congregation. Because the little girl that got a dress, she prized it so much. She also, I don't remember if it was leukemia or something, typhoid, she got something. And she wanted to be buried in her brand new little dress. And they wrote the letter and told them that's what they did. They buried her in her new dress because she just loved that dress. You know, our kids just don't even think about what it'd be like to not have something like that, something nice. I was sick. And there are so many elderly and feeble people that would get no help from the government. In Vietnam, they get no help. If the Buddhists didn't go in and help them, they would get no help. This one's Kosovo right here. Sick and you visited me. We visited this home of this woman here, Sadia. This is in Kosovo. She got shot in the back during the war and was paralyzed. A Serb shot her. And Dania Jacobs and Nikki Marancic from Montana, Nikki's from Billings, Dania's from Bozeman. Fiola DiRocco is our contact there. She's the interpreter. And they examined her before her pressure soars because she's paralyzed. And they told her, you're doing a real good job here. Those sores, you're doing a real good job. And boy, old Sadie was just thanking them for coming and you know, helping her there. And they said, oh, Dania said, we didn't do anything. We didn't do anything. Oh, yes, you did, man. She said, nobody tried to help. No, my government doesn't help me. Everybody's forgotten about me. But you came all the way around the world to come here to visit me and to help me. So, boy, she was really appreciative. You know, the Lord said, even a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, man. You know, it don't take much. Obviously, you can't raise them out of the wheelchair. You can't heal them, and yet they're thanking you profusely for helping them. Isn't that strange? While they're sitting there telling them, we didn't do anything. Oh, yes, you did. We don't know the power that we have. We got to appreciate what we have. When people are hurting and lonely, sometimes, you know, all you got to do is listen, man. And that's all they need maybe at the time. It's just someone to listen for once. We all can do that. In the Philippines, a little kid, a little baby had the cleft palate. You know, I was up preaching. Me and Jay was in the Philippines. I'm up here like I'm doing right now, and I'm looking. The woman's sitting right there, and she's got this baby, and I'm seeing this lip. So I thought, okay, we're going to deal with that. And I finished the message, and the crowd started to break up, and the woman was just walking away. You know, I'm standing up front. She's not coming to me with her problem. I had to go to her. You know, it's already been brought out. You go to them, and I ask her, I said, are you going to be able to do something with your child's lip there? She gave me these big eyes, and then hung her head, and no. I said, well, you don't have any money for that? I said, look, we're going to take care of that for you. We're going to get your baby's lip fixed. So, you know, we gave her, it was about $300 would get it done. So we gave it to her, the preacher was there. Then it was the next day. In fact, see, these are two different kids. This one here, this is a different one. This little boy knew something was wrong with his face. That other little one didn't even know. Because this little boy up topside here, he was trying to hide his face. When you were looking at him, he's going like this. And other kids would pick on him and tease him. See, and that's another one of those deals where they think they're cursed or something. So we told that family we were going to do the same thing and help them out, but we couldn't keep giving our cash away. I came home because I was going to send it, as I do. I have some contacts there with Dante and Brother Monroe to get money to where we need to get it there. And someone in the assembly gave me the advertisement out of a magazine for Smile Train. Well, it's called Smile Train before. It's called Operation Smile Now or something. Same thing. They fix cleft lips all over the world. All you got to do is connect them. Give them the name and address, and they'll make it happen. The only thing that Smile Train or Operation Smile doesn't pay for is transportation. So you got to get them, in this case, to Manila. And so we were able to do that. We can't just walk away with waving these leather-bound Bibles around, talking about this great God and this great love and all this great compassion, when not 10 feet away from me was a mother holding a baby with half its, you know, nose in its face, big hole in its face. How can we do that? You know, you can't fix all the cleft palates in the world, but when you've got one standing 10 feet away from you, like the Lord said, when you have it in your power, when you have it right there in front of you, Jesus said, the poor you're always going to have. We can't fix everything, but each and every one of us can be Christ to somebody right here, right now. What did Mike say? You might have to get muddy and bloody. Okay, trust me, if you go to Burma, you'll be muddy and bloody. Them leeches were falling out of the trees on me and Gary, man, right down our necks. I mean, I had blood all over my back. I had blood in my shoes because them critters went up from the ground. They're coming up off the ground. They're coming off the trees. I was imprisoned. Man, I got to admit, that's a bad brim right there. Mike, check that hat out, man. I got to get me two of those. Really, that guy was a nice guy. He's the commandant at this boys' prison in Belarus. And I really related to these young kids because I was locked up for 2 years when I was 14. I was 13 and got out when I was 15. And these guys, I sat right in there talking with them young guys, man, and they were really digging it. But that's a boys' prison in Belarus. They don't let us into the prisons anymore. And, of course, this is Mike's favorite place right here. Taraski Mental Institution. That was an experience. But I'll tell you what, to see these poor people, they had like one functioning toilet for 100 guys. Water all over the floor because the whole pipes were rotted. I mean, the mattress, the bedding, everything was filthy, rotten, and it just makes you crazy. Because yes, they have mental problems. They're infirm in that way. But these people are made in the image of God as well. They're worthy of dignity. And for Lukashenko to just disregard this population and expect foreigners to come. I'll tell you who came and fixed that place up. The Irish did. The Irish government sent people in there. They rebuilt this huge men's block. There's a women's block too. Because it was unbelievable the condition that these people were living in this place. Yeah, come to think of it, DJ said he was there. He said, even if he gets Alzheimer's, he said, I'll never forget Taraski. Look, trust me, you don't want to go into a former Soviet mental institution, especially after dark. Because those guys ain't really, well, they had those guys locked up. But all the rest, because they were beating each other up. The other ones were all walking around, and they were glad to have visitors. They don't get much company there. And so they wanted to come and introduce themselves to us, and they came up, and they were pawing all over us with slobber coming out of their mouths. And it was, like I said, the most frightening thing he ever experienced in his life. Dima the driver went in there with us, and we had a 15-year-old girl that we were supposed to be delivering to somebody. And I don't remember, it was one of Nikolai said, can you drop this girl off at her parents or something? Yeah, okay. So she happened to be in the van with us. Well, when we went into Taraski, we didn't know what we were walking into. And it was cold and it was snowing. So Dima just came in with us, the driver, and he brought that 15-year-old girl. Man, she freaked out right after we got in the door, and Dima had to get her out of there. Wish he'd have took the rest of us out. But it's unbelievable. All around us, it's there. People hurting, needing. All we got to do is become those all things to all people, but that we might all, by all means, you're only going to save some. Not everybody is going to just want to jump right on board there. Because there's a healing, see, and this is what they got to be helped to understand. The healing, the eyes can open. The ears can open. The lame can walk. The dead can be raised. Jesus said, I've come a light into the world that whoever believes in me should not abide in darkness. The blind can see in the hearing of the gospel. These blind people in Vietnam, and of course, Davy and Sue, very familiar with this place, been there a couple, we made it a regular stop. You know what? We show up there, we tell them, hi guys, we're back. And what, we got some noodles and some rice and we got some blankets and mosquito nets. And you know what we tell them? We know this doesn't make all the difference in the world for you right now. It doesn't ease your suffering and all that you know, because they're very poor. And a box of rice and some noodles and a mosquito net is not going to make all that go away. I said, but we're here because we have never forgotten you. And that's what we want you to know, is that we have not forgotten you. And we really do care about you. What we're bringing you today is just simply a token of our feelings and our friendship with you. And we want you to know that. They get that. They know that that box of rice and them noodles isn't going to change their whole life. But boy, they sure appreciate it when we come and spend just a little bit of time with them and just give them this little token. That's all we got to do. That's all we have to do sometimes, just to let them know. That poor guy there, you know, he doesn't even realize we're trying to hand him something. You can see one of his arms is gone. He's blind because a landmine blew up in his face, blew both his arms off, and he's blind, and he's stuck in this place. You know, those are the kind of things that really drive it home to me to realize when you walk away and you got tears in your eyes, you're thinking, you just wish you could do more, but don't underestimate what you can do. What Christ does through us, we are powerful. We are powerful. And this message of ours is not just for middle class Americans that are doing halfway decent. This is for all people for all time. In other words, it's empowering to any one of these people. The message of Christ that came into this world 2,000 years ago can still change lives. In a very powerful way. And we're the carriers of this message. We're the possessors of this information. And we need to remember that. Sometimes you feel like, well, there's not much we can do. Yes, there is. It doesn't mean it's money. It's just you. It's your heart. It's spending that time and maybe just letting them know you care. The lame can walk in the hearing of the gospel. This is Oleg's landlord. He lost both his legs, his landlord from way back when. He's not his landlord now. Lost both his legs in Afghanistan. This is in Hanoi, at Dr. Fong's school for disabled kids. We built this wheelchair ramp in Kosovo for a young lady that was hanging laundry on the second story balcony. A lot of those homes are being rebuilt from the war, and I don't know why. A lot of them, they haven't got their railings on there. They'll go out on those porches, and there's no railing, and there was clothesline, and she was hanging clothes and backed right off the second story and fell and hit a retaining wall and snapped her back. She's like 22 years old. Oh, her parents were still, it happened 2 years ago, and they were still crying about it, as you would understand. They said, we need a wheelchair ramp to get her down and into the vehicle to take her to the doctor sometimes. We got to carry her. They said, is there any way we could get a ramp? So working with Handicosts in Kosovo, and I know Alexandra is familiar with that. She was just with us in Kosovo. They built that ramp, or we paid to have it done, to bring just a little bit of relief for a family who was just profusely thankful, so thankful to have just a little bit of help. Lepers cleansed. They still got lepers, both in Vietnam and in Myanmar. We were coming over the mountains in Vietnam one time between Da Nang and Hue, and we were at a little roadside thing where you could get some water or juice or something. And they told us right down this big valley we were looking down was a leper colony. Lepers cleansed. The deaf can hear. The deaf school, I know Bill remembers this place too. The deaf kids in Babrusk. We wanted to do something fun for them. We couldn't try to think of what we could do because kids, you know, you buy equipment and stuff like that, and, you know, okay, they can appreciate some equipment. But how about some fun? I talked to Nikolai Balbutsky. We were able to get two full-size buses to show up at this place 2 hours out of Minsk. Those buses brought that whole deaf school back into Minsk with the staff. They have a permanent circus in Minsk, and the theme at that time was an aqua theme, where they flooded the arena. They actually had porpoises and stuff in there, a whole bunch of clowns, and clowns are mute anyway. Clowns don't talk. So it was great for deaf kids, and you should have seen those deaf kids because they know how to sign. You know, they'd smack their friend and go, them fingers were flying. And the staff came up, one lady came up to me, and she had tears in her eyes, and she said, you have no idea what you guys have done for these children. And from the circus, they went to McDonald's. They thought they just died and went to heaven. They went to McDonald's. At that time, that was the only one. Now, Minsk has got about four more. But, I mean, to do that for the kids, it really impacted the staff. Now, keep that in mind. When you're doing something, you think this is your target, the orphan or the widow. It's the person standing right next to you that's going to be blown away by what you just did. A lot of times with the kids, it goes over their head. They don't really know what's going on. I mean, they appreciate a gift or whatever, but it's the people that are helping them that are not able to do what you just did because they don't have the resources, and yet you show up and you provide that for them, for those kids, and it brings tears to their eyes. Instantly. The dead are raised up. This is just a really kind of a personal one for me. Years ago, first went to Belarus, 2000, and I think this was in 1995. We were doing the English classes. Jim Spinotti, you guys know Jim. You know, he was the one kind of heading that up, him and Richard Merrill. And what we'd be doing, the English classes during the day and lectures at night, or the preaching. Well, it was lectures. We couldn't call it preaching. And, all these Belarusians were in there, and I was sitting along the side, and this one woman sitting in the back was very, very attentive. And the minute we got done, poof, she's out the door. So she did that about two or three nights in a row, and I was watching her, and I told Jim, I said, you see that woman? She comes in, she really pays attention. The minute we say amen at the closing prayer, boom, she's out the door. I'm going to cut her off at the pass. So I waited, man. We got done. She was going to go out the door. I got right in front of her. I said, hello. I said, been noticing you here. It looked like you've been really interested and you know what's going on. Do you understand what's being said? And she goes, I'm just going to get with that McNick. Well, she doesn't speak English. I said, Galena, get over here. I said, tell this woman I've been watching her. Ask her, does she understand everything? Everything, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, yes, very much so, very much so. I said, ask her if she'd like for us to get together and we'll study. And, oh, she didn't want to be a bother. I said, tell her we flew halfway around the world to be bothered, so bother us. She did want to get together. She did want to talk. So we got down, sat down talking with her and she reasoned why she was leaving so early right after. The transportation, the later it gets at night, it slows down in Minsk. In the middle of the day, those buses are running. You're standing at the bus stop. Every 5 minutes, there's a bus. When you get after sundown, it gets dark and it's getting late. Those buses might not show up for 45 minutes, and it was snowing. She had to get home. Okay, so we get talking with her and find out, yeah, she's got a problem, all right. She got hooked up with a married guy, ended up pregnant, didn't know what to do, talked to her brother, who was an Orthodox priest, one of them guys with the black robes and the lampshades on their head. She told him what she did, and he told her, you are going to hell, is what he told his sister. So she's devastated, don't know what to do. We opened up the gospel to her, and man, I mean, she was all just tears of joy. We baptized her. Lena is her name. That's the baby that she was carrying when we baptized her. And Alosha likes to tell people now that he was baptized twice. Once by me and once by somebody else. Sorry to say, his mama got stomach cancer. I think it'll be 2 years this August. She passed away. So when I went to Belarus, me, Big Mike, and Alan Marshall, we asked Losha, I said, hey, man, can you take us out there? And if not, we'll get someone else. He said, I want to take you. So Losha took us to the graveyard. But see, our hope, the dead are raised up. That's what it's all about. When we possess that information, this is not just going around blowing sunshine up people's noses. What we have is life-changing. But it has to be in us first. It has to start with us first before we're ever going to be any use to anyone else with what we have. In the hearing of the gospel, the dead are raised up. Nikolai Balbutsky being immersed. Some baptisms there in the Philippines. The poor have the gospel preached. Myanmar, Vietnam, Jay in the Philippines. And those Bible studies. I'll tell you what, I know Davey and Sue appreciate these. Who am I missing anybody? I forget where I'm at sometimes. You got you two guys. Who else has been to Vietnam with us? Okay. I don't want to leave anybody out that's been in these things. Man, you get in them hotel rooms, man, that temperature's 100 degrees in there. Myanmar, Belarus. Let's see, got Mike, me, Oleg. I thought Bob was in one of those, Bob Kuhlman. Our emphasis on evangelism can make a worldwide impact. Not that we need to be just in the foreign field. It starts right here. Because if it ain't here, it ain't going to be there. But if it's here, it'll get there. That's how this works. I would have never thought that this is what I'd be doing in my life. But because it started with me in my own life, and I got to admit, when we first started doing humanitarian aid, I thought we need to do this for the practical reasons because it looked like the people were hurting. Guess who got changed in doing that? I did. And I think Bill and Mike and Bob, anyone else, and I got some more to show this later today, I'm surprised how many people have actually been boots on the ground with DCHA. I had at least 50 people I found that I have had doing that. And the ones that are affected the most, I really believe, and this is the Lord's wisdom in this. When he said it's more blessed to give than to receive, he knew what he was talking about. He ain't talking about money, just money. If you esteem others better, if you look to the needs of others, if you go and help somebody else, look, if you're having a bad day, if you want to feel good, go do something for somebody and then see how it changes your whole outlook for the rest of the day. God knows what he's doing. Best kept secret in the world. Because the people that could care less about anybody else who are the most miserable people in this world will never find this tremendous precious secret. If you really want to have joy and peace in believing, give up your life to save your life for someone else. So more to follow. Sorry I'm probably a little long on this, Marshall, but I'm done.